Poya.
This is Robbie.
Welcome to Uncharted and Eclectic.
And thanks for joining us again.
Pete, my friend, welcome to Uncharted and Eclectic. It's great to have you. How are you?
Poya, thanks so much for having me.
Of course, absolutely. You've listened to a couple of episodes, so I'd love to maybe have you kick us off with a nice, concise bio of both your personal life as well as your business.
Awesome. Well, it all started in 1986 in Washington, D.C. I'll go a little bit more concise than that. My name is Pete. I'm originally from the D.C. area. I have worked in technology sales for the better part of a decade. I've worked at some really fantastic companies, had a chance to work with some inspiring and truly brilliant people, and really love working in sales, building sales teams at these early stage and fast moving companies. So I was really excited to connect with you and get to share a little bit about that today.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to have you. Look, I know you're growing up, you were in a basketball fan and player, and you played at Stanford. So I'm surprised you didn't want to become a Georgetown Hoya, but that's a whole different topic. So you escaped out of Washington, D.C. Talk to us a little bit about, I'd love to maybe get some context, like, were you always an athlete? Were you competitive? Like, how do you think that influenced your life?
Yeah, so it's a little interesting. I started off as a true basketball fan, and almost in like this obsessive, weird way, where I would collect basketball trading cards and go to sleep every night between 10 or midnight trying to memorize statistics of Tom Gugliotta, who is the Washington Bullets power forward in 1992. And it was something that I always just like truly loved. Like, basketball was an incredible combination of skill and physicality and just this really interesting team dynamic. And then kind of later on, I wound up in my own playing career, having some success in high school, getting a scholarship to Stanford, which was at the time the number one basketball team in the country. And then even getting a chance to play overseas in Germany after college. Now, I kind of realized at some point along that journey, whether it was going up against the Lopez twins in practice, or actually in one of the summers playing at Georgetown against Dikembe Mutombo or people like that, that, hey, you know, this might not be your forever job. And it was kind of an interesting period of figuring out what was next. And so post my basketball career, I had a chance to be an investment banking analyst. I had a chance to be a speechwriter, actually, briefly, prior to finding my way into software sales.
Wow, what have you not done? So just to make sure I understand this right, so you at first just start trading, and you got into basketball, I'm assuming, what, middle school, high school? Is that kind of when you got into it?
Yeah, probably elementary school, but definitely more seriously in middle school and high school.
Wow, okay. And then you had like a nice, I don't know, 7-8 year journey, went on to play at Stanford. Which Lopez, if you had to pick, if it was like back to like recess and you had to pick either Brooke or, Robin or Alex, who would you pick?
Brooke was definitely, he was just automatic 2 points. Whenever he got the ball around the post, he was just so hard to guard. And Robin was a ferocious defender. Wow. I actually have 4 fake teeth as a result of my time playing with the Lopez twins. But hard to pick. I mean, they've both had fantastic careers and they're great people. So it's cool to see them still relevant, still trucking along now that we're a little bit longer past our college graduation dates.
Yeah, absolutely. And then ultimately you get into tech sales. How do you think, like, your past history, whether it was a speechwriter, going to Germany, the unknowns, or playing basketball growing up, like, how did that, like, you think, helped you in your tech journey, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question. I think sales is kind of a funny profession because most people who wind up in sales didn't wake up as a second grader or third grader and say, I want to go be a technology sales professional. At least it wasn't the case for me. It was starting.
I don't know, man. I woke up when I was 6. I was like, I want to be a true salesperson for the rest of my life.
So. Yeah, you were ahead of the curve. You were an early adopter on that front. But for me, it when I was, I don't know, maybe 24, 25, and I realized that starting power forward for the Washington Wizards was not going to be my next play, I started to think through, like, what are things that I'm good at? What are things that I like? And I always loved writing. I studied international relations and politics in college. Got a chance to write a little bit when I was overseas. So speech writing was interesting, but then I wanted something that was more competitive and kind of channeled that part of my persona. And investment banking was a really interesting kind of foray into that. And I really fell into sales as a result of having a friend who had started off at Box.com in 2010, 2011, and really started to have a fantastic experience there. I by no means thought that this was going to be the career for me or something that I was really drawn to, but I knew I wanted to move back to the West Coast, and I just wound up loving it. Like, technology sales at pre-IPO companies is such a fun, interesting and fast-paced, really competitive but challenging environment. So for the right person, where you might have a little bit more of an extroverted bent, where you're always interested in learning about companies, about people, and really the psychology around how people make decisions, it's a job that you can never truly master and is always going to challenge you. But for me, it turned out to be a really happy career fit.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's and we're blessed, right? I don't think people realize how lucky we are sometimes to be even in those opportunities and work with so many great companies that at scale have a positive impact on the world. Look, what people probably don't realize is you've been a part of these companies and been really successful at them. So at Box, you moved from an SDR all the way up to an AE over a 3-year period. Then you went to Quip, even though it was a short stint. Like, that company got acquired by Salesforce for billions of dollars. And then you go to Intercom, where you have a successful journey moving up from an IC to a leadership position. Now you're at Loom, right? A company that's raised, I don't know, $45, $50 million from some of the best investors I can think of. The question I have for you, now that you've been part of these journeys, some really long, some short, what, when you looked at whether it's Loom or when you look at your next opportunity, like, what do you think are some of those like must have criterias for a company that you think the company needs to have in order to be successful as they scale? Like, what are those non-negotiables for you?
Totally. This is something I would love to pretend that I had a totally formulaic and reproducible approach to understanding which company is going to hit and where to go next. But there is a true element of luck. And there's a true element of when you're joining it pre-IPO, early stage companies, sometimes things happen to unpredictability. And so just knowing that it's not going to be 100% hit rate is probably a good expectation to set out front. And then one of the things that I've really thought about a lot over the last couple of years is the idea around in sales, how to really optimize to being your true and authentic self, how to speak in a way that represents you, how to work in areas that truly inspire you, how to join companies that have missions and teams that really connect with you and resonate with you on a very personal level as well as a professional level. I think that's probably where I'd start. So, I mean, there's surface level things where you can see how much money does this company raise? What did they do in revenue over the past 3 years? What are the trends that we're seeing? But to really take that time to evaluate companies and say, what's this company's mission? Does this company's mission resonate with me? Do I think that this will matter in a year, in 5 years? Is this something that inspires me? That to me is actually probably more important than some of the surface level metrics. And I can't tell you how many sales professionals I've worked with or spoken to over the last couple of years. I actually was for something else going through some numbers, and I've interviewed over 600 sales professionals in different roles over the last 3.5 years. And oftentimes you get somebody who might make a jump just because this is a new hot company or so-and-so VC made an investment and I've really got to get in. And if you wind up working for a company that it's not really a company you're passionate about, it's not a mission that resonates with you, it's not a product that deeply interests you, you can really tell. It's hard to kind of fake that authentic love and passion for whatever company or whatever product you're working for as a salesperson. I think that that's a truly foundational piece to realizing your potential in sales or really any industry you're in.
Yeah, it's before we reverse to the other side, the thing I loved about what you said at the beginning is identifying those strengths, like those ticker points is kind of how I call it. And not only should, I think awareness, right, is essentially what I'm trying to get at is, and I think sometimes we miss that point, like finding out what the heck is it that we're good at. But more importantly, this is sometimes I think sales managers, sales leaders, revenue leaders kind of get wrong is they try replicating everybody into a robot versus trying to identify what everybody's good at and like doubling down on those things. And what I'm trying to get at is some people are just relationship oriented, right? And that's how they sell and they can get to a win that way. Some are the challenger type and there's benefits or reasons why some person does better than others. And that's where it becomes tough to replicate. But what I love about what you're saying is be aware of what those ticks are and what your strengths are, right? Whether it's taking, I don't know, an exam or personality test or just having your close five people tell you kind of what those are, but be able to like match them with the right stage of a company and the right people. One of the things, now that you've interviewed 600 plus people, what do you think candidates can do to separate themselves in the interview process?
Totally. It's a great question, a prescient one for a number of people who are looking for their next play right now during a really competitive job market and time. And I think that maybe the overarching advice and the place I'd start is for anyone who's interviewing for that next job to truly believe in the power of being themselves. One piece of feedback that I got early on in my managerial career was when I was presenting in front of teams, I would kind of stiffen up and straighten up and the tone of my voice would change and I would use my hands in a way that I never would in a conversation with you. And some feedback I got was that, hey, this is actually not resonating with your team the same way it is when you're having a real conversation. And people can tell when you're having a real conversation. There's a guy named Todd Capone who wrote The Transparency Sale, which for my money is the best sales book of the past 5 years. And it's really about how human beings in general are highly adept at picking up when there's an untrustworthy element or inauthentic exchange in your communication. And so I think that some people have the ability to kind of come in and sell you a vision that they may or not be on board with, but most people don't. And most people can tell. And I think that that really carries over to interviews. And it comes from a place of insecurity. In interviews, you want to be a version of yourself that people have confidence in and people have a high degree of just like a great feeling about this person would be super professional. And sometimes that leads you to maybe using words you don't normally use or communicating in a way that is inauthentic to who you are. The interviews, by and large, that I come out and feel really great about a conversation or about a candidate are candidates where I get a sense that this was a real conversation. I learned something interesting about who this person really is. And I want to bet that this is somebody who I want to work with. So I think that starting from a place of make sure that these are your words and you're comfortable enough to really represent yourself in that interview setting. And that's going to be more powerful and maybe a more polished version of you. That's probably the first place I'd start.
Yeah, no, anytime you can do those things to like bring it out, I think it would be awesome. For the folks that maybe are not as outgoing as you or me as others are, and like they maybe have their guard up. And look, it's a lot of people sometimes think the best salespeople are extroverted. That's not always true, right? Like some of the best people I know are introverted, right? And they don't shine in the interview like you and I would. Right. First time you meet us. So how do you make sure you're providing an equal opportunity for those folks in the interview process?
It's a great call out. The best salesperson I've ever worked with is a woman who is a card carrying introvert and somebody who is very quiet and, you know, kind of physically small and just somebody who came in and asked the most pointed and interesting and insightful questions. Was able to drive to incredible outcomes with these large old school enterprise customers. And so that for me early in my career was a fantastic learning of salespeople can come in really different packages and they can all be super effective. If you're an introvert, it's okay. If you're an extrovert, if you're okay, if you're a challenger, if you're a relationship person, it's okay. It's all about figuring out how do you maximize your strengths and really optimize the way that you sell and the way that you communicate to influencing purchasing decisions and painting a really inspiring vision.
Yeah, love it.
But to your question, how can you set it up where people can shine in different groups? So this, I think, is a superpower that managers really have to develop, or leaders have to develop in general, is to try and recognize the communication styles of the people you're working with, either your direct reports, your colleagues, maybe somebody you're interviewing, to try and tailor your approach to match their strengths. It's one of the things where very early in my managerial career, I was given the advice to always see who's kind of not contributing in conversation and figure out how to shift it in a way where that person would feel comfortable, or to bring the conversation over them to make sure that people are included. And I think you can do similar things in an interview environment. The key is changing your approach and setting up questions in a way that where it's going to be engaging for different communication styles and different personality types to really shine. Because if you start from the fundamental place of people can be introverts, extroverts, and kind of everything in between and be really successful in sales, then it's your job to suss out what type of communicator that person is in the interview setting and to really get to the answers of how does this person work and how successful do I think this person could be if we brought them into the show.
I love it. It's including them part of the conversation, right? And I learned this probably the hard way until I became a manager. Things, activities that sometimes each of us do that we don't realize how it impacts like the people that probably don't speak the loudest, right? And trying to do everything you can to elevate their voice, right? And getting them to be a part of the conversation. And what really honestly changed this for me is my girlfriend is a nurse at Stanford, and nursing is a really, really tough job. And before this job, she loved her work. And the reason she loved it was she made a group of like friends that she like worked really closely with, right? And then she goes to Stanford. At first, her first floor was like maybe not the best like relationship she could create, right? Which made it really tough. So if you're in an environment that's already hard, which I don't think sales is in any way as hard as nursing, but it's difficult as well, right? So like anytime you can do anything to bring people together and find alignment and find similarities and getting them to be part of the conversation and become like buddies, it just makes it even more enjoyable to keep coming back day after day, right? It's that element that sometimes I don't think gets talked about that I wanted to call out. Pete, this has been an excellent episode. We can probably continue, but what I'm really excited is probably having you back when you've hired and interviewed 1,000+ people just to see what's been different. But before we say our goodbyes, I love to ask the famous three questions, and we change it up every time depending on who the person is. So my first question for you is, looking back, what is one thing that you wish like the young Pete knew before X? And X could be frankly before you left Stanford. X could be before you got into the your first tech sales job at Box. X could be before you came back and joined the workforce. But what is that one thing you wish someone had told young Pete?
Oh man, this is a good question. This was something that someone did tell me, and eventually it was very impactful. But I think that very early in my sales career, we were at a fast-moving startup going through hypergrowth, hiring 2x year over year. And at the time, I got really stuck on the idea of, when am I going to get this next promotion? When am I going to move into this role? We're hiring things too fast. We're missing things. Things are messy. And I went out to lunch with somebody who I really trusted, who's kind of continued to be a mentor and a friend to me. And after diligently listening to me complain about, oh, I should probably get this promotion and I should get this thing. And here are all the problems that we're seeing. There was a great couple of beats of silence. And this person said, well, what are you going to do about it? And it was like a real reminder to me of, especially kind of in your professional career, if you go into the sales route, there's really nothing guaranteed to you. It's going to be something that you really have to figure out. Hey, there are going to be a number of problems and obstacles and hurdles and roadblocks. And ultimately, you're signing yourself up to deliver results to your team and yourself and your business. So it kind of falls on you to figure out how to be solutions oriented. And I think that's probably where I would go with talking to a younger version of myself is stay solutions oriented, know that there are going to be a lot of problems and processes and things will be messier than you expect, and hang in there, like keep working, keep at it. And if you can stay solutions oriented, it usually leads to great places.
I so appreciate you for bringing that up, because I learned another nugget based on everything you said, which is when we're in sales or anything, right, when it's numbers driven, it's month to month or quarter to quarter, we keep thinking about the destination. Like, I just want to get to X, right? And we forget, like, it's all about the journey, whether it's good or bad, like just enjoy it. Because when we kind of think about the destination, we just want to get to the next promotion or the next number. You forget life goes on, right? So not only do I appreciate some tactical advice you gave, but that's the only thing I at least really appreciated learning from your story. Now that you have kids, what is one thing, this is my second question, what is one thing that you think your parents instilled in you when you were younger that you really want to instill in your kids moving forward? And take your time.
No, this is a good one. Something that I'm really passionate about is the idea of changing our relationship with the concept of failure. So growing up, particularly in a sports orientation, failure was something that I just have a real aversion to. I'm not a good loser. I'm hyper-competitive. There's all kind of the sports tropes that people fall into. And I think that for a lot of things, that's a nice drive. That's something that propels you to working harder or trying to figure out different approaches to achieve an outcome. But failure is and will always be the best teacher for anything you're going to do. And failure is so, so important, particularly early on, to embrace, to develop your resilience. And I think that one of the things that I truly, truly hope for my son is to let him know that he will fail. And it's okay, and to call it out, you know, not to be afraid of labeling something as a failure, and then to really work with him on developing that grit and resilience to continue kind of working and not to become disenfranchised.
Yeah, it's first attempt at learning, right? That's yeah. What failure stands for. So another good token that I know past podcast guests have brought on, but we can't be reminded of it enough. Well, Pete, this has been an excellent episode. I can't thank you enough for being a fan. You've listened to our episodes in the past, but also for joining. If people want to get in touch with you, one, would you be open to that? And two, what would be the best way?
Definitely open to it. I think LinkedIn is the only kind of social network that I'm active on. So feel free to connect with me or to reach out on LinkedIn. If you want to email me directly, I'm just pete@loom.com. And Poya, thanks so much for having me on. This is a really fantastic podcast, and I appreciate what you're building and doing here. So thanks for including me.
Yeah, absolutely. Pleasure. Thank you all for listening and tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks.
That was fun.
Cool. That was awesome.
Helps engineers and engineering managers become great leaders. And how do they do that? Well, Plato helps you find the perfect mentor thanks to its network of experienced engineering leaders who work at the world's best tech companies. For a monthly fee, you have unlimited access to mentors who can help when you have challenging situations as a manager. Visit them at platohq.com.